Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Thank you for tuning in to the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast. Please subscribe to our weekly Boston Bruins Hockey Talk on listening platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify Podcasts. We'd certainly appreciate it if you give our show a 5-star rating along with a written review. You can also subscribe to our official YouTube channel for a video version of our weekly program. If you'd like to support our show financially, please go to our blackandgoldhockey.com website and click on our affiliated Fanatics banner before shopping online. Another way to financially support our weekly program is to become a Patreon member to be eligible for weekly Boston hockey prizes and monthly Boston Bruins hand-signed jersey giveaways. Please go to patreon.com/blackandgoldhockeypodcast and donate just $1 per episode. Many thanks for the continued support and enjoy the show.
This episode number 333 of the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast is brought to you by FanDuel.com, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network. You can sign up at FanDuel.com/Boston and claim your no sweat first bet for $1,000. It's a pleasure to be here on a day that feels like October outside. I know Grace doesn't get it, but it's 50 and cloudy and gross here in New England for some reason. But to Grace, how are you? And another new backdrop we see. So nice to see you've shifted things a little bit.
Yes, just a little bit. I'm in the same room, but I moved slightly so I could be in the best light because it's actually very nice here today. Probably like 85 degrees. So
just rubbing it in. Mark Allred, as always. How are you, Mark? Good to see you, pal.
Good, Steve. Great to have you both here. Grace, how are you? Good week. You know, I'm back to work after a nice vacation, 11-day vacation. So back to the grind fully. But the best news that I got, well, it's better news. It's not the best quite yet, but I did get some good news about my dad. And I want to update the listeners and our supporters about my father. He had 3 MRIs in the past 3 months, and the cancerous tumor that is right above his pancreas has not grown, which is awesome. And he has a picture of my dad and myself. So I want to give a shout out to my dad, Mark Allred Sr. Love you, big guy. And I'm proud of you. You know, he's a fighting this. So 3 MRIs, and the doctors were happy enough. I think he's Dana-Farber in Boston or Methuen. I'm not sure that they said that we don't have to see you until November. So That is really good news. And no surgery and no treatment as of right now. So if it grows any more, that's when they'll start to get more involved with the surgery and treatment. So shout out to my dad. And also one more shout out I want to do is for my my good friend Nick Busa. His nickname is Downtown Boosie, and he is one of the three hosts of the Only Bruins Hockey Podcast, fantastic program that he does with Brett Howard. My boy Downtown Boosie got a hole in one yesterday. Unbelievable. And we were talking about this before we started recording. He got a hole in one on an aerated green. How the hell does somebody do that? he must have been in one so bad that he like shanked it so hard that it hit one of those freaking aerated holes and just bounced the right way. But good luck, you know, good on him. We got to get out and play some golf pretty soon.
That's like playing at Pirate's Cove when you're hitting on aerated
green. Yeah, right.
I mean, it's a hot mess. But that's awesome, man. That's the dream. That's the dream right there. Nothing worse than getting to a par three and going, I'm going to get a hole in one, and then you shank it in the woods.
Yeah, right.
Every single freaking time. That's awesome. That's great news about your dad, too. Love to hear that. So
thank you to everybody. Yeah, thank you to everybody who's been reaching out, DMing me, on the Twitter, Facebook, and emails and so on. You guys are amazing, and I truly appreciate the support. It helps me and my family get through these tough times. So I truly appreciate all of you.
Love it. Love to hear it. We got a lot of things to discuss here, a lot of rumors, a little bit of news, but a little bit here on what we're watching and what we're not watching. Last night, Vegas took a 1-0 series lead with a 5-2 win over Florida. I'm wondering if anybody watched the game. I know I had it on, but I spent most of the time doom scrolling on my phone. Grace, did you catch any of that game? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I watched it with a friend of mine down here, and he's a Hurricanes fan, so both of us sort of had it. Yeah, I know. Believe me, I don't. You know how I feel about Hurricanes fans. Everybody knows how I feel about Hurricanes fans. But, I thought it was great, I thought, at least up until the end. And then I was talking to my other friend who's a Panthers fan afterwards, and he was like, it was terrible. They sucked. They got to do better. They got to be better. I thought the game was pretty good up until, like, the end. It kind of felt like the Panthers lost some of their composure because they've been really good at having this controlled lack of composure, but then even they seem to lose that come the end of the game. You know, you saw Tkachuk throw a punch while one of the Stahl brothers held back Haig. Hit him right in the face, got thrown out 4 minutes in a game misconduct. Just a stupid, stupid play. But I thought it was a great game up until then. The Knights looked really good. Mark Stone looked great. I'm excited. I think it's going to be an exciting series. I'm still saying Cats in six, but I think the Knights are showing that they have a lot more in them than maybe what they showed in a couple of those Dallas games. So I'm excited. It's a good series. I recommend people watch it if you're not too upset still. I am a little bit, but it can be fun. Get a drink. Start watching.
Yeah, what about you, Mark?
Yeah, I watched last night's game. It was exciting, just to say the least. I didn't think it was going to be like this because of this long-ass layoff. I think the Panthers had a week and a half off while Vegas had 4 or 5 days off to rest. So, in the first period, I'm like, I really thought that they were going to need to really stretch their legs and figure out the game and, you know, try to find some weaknesses, in game one. But I was really surprised on the pace. It was fast back and forth. It was very physical. I think I've seen the longest face rubs ever in hockey. Yeah. I mean, that was literally like a 6-minute face washing expose. You know what I mean? It was crazy. But ultimately, that time off might have gotten to the Florida Panthers later on in the game, as Grace alluded to. And they just couldn't hold back on the Vegas Golden Knights pressure. And Vegas's power play was really spot on. Special teams was really good, too. So I'm still taking – I'm going to go with Grace, too. I'm going Florida Panthers in six. This series is far from over, but it's exciting. And I got to get as much hockey in as possible because as soon as the Stanley Cup finals are over, I'm transferring my attention to the Australian Pro Ice Hockey League. So I got to get as much NHL hockey as possible.
Yeah, I did watch it. I got to be honest. I think that both of these teams, I just absolutely love their style and pace of play. Like, I just think it makes it fun. It's not like, I mean, I'm sure Grace isn't watching it, but the NBA finals, like, that's a nightmare scenario for the NBA. Just two boring ass teams that can't shoot. These two teams are a lot of fun to watch. I kind of always forget about the star power on Vegas. I mean, when you're rolling out Marc Gasol and Stone and Eichel and Riley Smith, even in William Karlsson's on your third line, and then you know, I don't know. Like, I have this man crush on Nick Hague. I want that guy on my team so bad. He's freaking awesome. He's tall. He's fast. He's in your face. You know, Shea Theodore. Mark can probably attest to this. Every now and then you find these players in the minor leagues that are there for a while, and then all of a sudden they have this NHL success, and you're like, that guy sucked in the minor leagues. Like, how is he any good? And that's how I feel about Carter Verhaeghe, and that's how I feel about Aiden Hill. Aiden Hill was hot garbage in the AHL. Couldn't stop a beach ball, and yet here he is making ridiculous saves in the Stanley Cup Finals. That blows my mind. It turns my mind sideways.
I said the same thing about Aiden Hill. I'm like, I don't think this guy's the answer for the Vegas Golden Knights. And boy, is this backfiring in my friggin' face.
Well, I mean, you know, Jordan Bennington is another one. He was, even when he was in Providence, I was like, well, this guy's not very good. And then, before you know it, he's winning cups. So I thought that was kind of funny watching. I'm waiting for Aiden Hill to give up 6-7 goals and be flopping all over the place. And sort of getting the opposite there. So fun
speaking
to watch.
Speaking of this game, what about the time? I got to get you riled up, Steve. 22 minutes past 8 p.m. Boy, did it drive me nuts. And what drove me even further nuts into the Planters freaking manufacturing company was the Dungeons & Dragons crap in the beginning. You know what I mean? It's like, we really don't need that. I think if you minus that, you're going to get down to 8-10. And you know, obviously the introductions need to happen as well. But, from now on, for the rest of the series, especially in Vegas, I'm not watching until 8:27.
Yeah, don't bother. I mean, I get the dog and pony show because it is Vegas.
I was going to say,
if it was in Columbus, I'd be like, guys, you're Columbus, Ohio. Like, get out of here with all the nonsense. But, you know, Vegas is, it's, you know, the show, right? Everybody goes for the show and. You know, however they get people in the building, although I don't know why it had to be televised. I can understand that part of it, but
the person I was watching with, the Canes fan, insisted, we went and were getting dinner before and insisted on getting back to watch that specifically. So another knock against Canes fans. And also, though, maybe some people are into it. He was like, we got to get back. I want to see that. I want to see the guy fight the dragon or whatever the hell they're doing in that part.
That's like somebody going to the Red Sox game just to listen to Sweet Caroline.
Yeah, oh, God.
This is the worst kind of Red Sox fans. Oh God. I think it'll be a fun series. I like Florida going into it just because I've watched more of their games, and then I watched Vegas last night, and I was like, holy smokes, man, this team can freaking ball. So one other thing that is I saw all night on social media was like. Anytime somebody did something good, it was like, oh, I bet you wish you didn't put him in the expansion draft. I wish you didn't put that guy in the expansion draft. It's like somebody has to go in the expansion draft. Like, every team has to give somebody up. So, like, beating up on Anaheim for giving up Shea Theodore, like, that's, like, how it works, guys. Like, hindsight is so easy when you're, what, 4 or 5 years down the line? I mean, how many years has Vegas been a team? 4 years? Like.
Well,
like,
2017, they became a team. So what is that? That's six years.
Yeah, I can't do math. So, but enough of that nonsense on Twitter. That's just a little ridiculous. So, 1-0 Vegas. We'll see where this game continues to go. The other thing that came out that we were watching, and I know I watched it this morning, was the final episode of Behind the Bee, which obviously when you lose, or when you win, it's a pretty emotional. I just hope Bruins fans appreciate having this production. The Columbus Blue Jackets don't have their version of Behind the Bee. The fact that you have players willing to get mic'd up in game 7 of a playoff game says a lot about the players. It says a lot about the production. You got Dennis Leary narrating it. Be glad that you have this, Bruins fans, because there's a lot of teams, a lot of markets that don't have this kind of dedication. But Mark, off the top, what are some of your thoughts from that final episode?
Wow, what a mixed bag of emotion. I watched it this morning, right before we started recording here on episode 333 of the Black Gold Hockey Podcast. And, I mean, what I gathered from it was just how tight this club is when things are going well. You know, I mean, it was so good to look at. But later on, it was just the emotions came out in me and also my wife, Courtney, when we were watching it as the bad times towards the end of the series came out, and it's all on film. And, you know, I don't know. It was a tough one to watch and officially end the year of that program, an Emmy award winning program. It's watching things like that can make the off season even a little longer. You know, it's, you know, here we are in the beginning of June, and you know, hockey's not going to come back until at least early October, you know, with, you know, preseason games and training camp and so on. But still, it's just, it makes you really think about how this team's going to be constructed in 23-24 and how different it might look, as Don Sweeney alluded to in his last press conference at TD Garden. So it should be interesting. But, I mean, great production, like you said. You know, I love the effort of getting behind the scenes, you know, getting fans into these areas where traditionally fans don't go at Warrior Ice Arena or even at TD Garden. So I love the program. Can't wait for it to come back, but hopefully next season it kind of ends on better terms.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you, Grace? Did you catch that thing?
Yeah, unfortunately. I agree. I think that it's so, at least the in terms of just it being a production, it being available, I think it speaks so much to really the commitment of all of the people behind the scenes on the team. And I think it just provides a better fan experience. I think maybe that's a big reason why Bruins fans, and obviously I'm biased because I'm immersed in Bruins fans, but it's just a different vibe and experience being a Bruins fan, feeling so connected, I think, to the team and being able to get this inside look. So I'm so grateful for that. But at the same time, you know, just it's so hard to watch now, because like when you're watching those first games of the series and you're feeling like, I remember, you know, we dropped one and it was like, didn't need it. Who cares? It's fine. You know, we're still best team in the history of the NHL. It'll be fine. But now looking at it from right here, you're seeing all this hope and just knowing exactly where it's going. It's like watching a car crash that you know is about to happen, but it hasn't happened yet. And so it's just hard to do, but I love being able to see and feel like, you know, we were out here looking in, hurting so much, but you know, the team was hurting so much more, and seeing that loss is so devastating. I mean, that final part when we actually got to see the Marchand Bergeron hug, and you just see Bergeron like fall into it's so impossible to watch without feeling so much emotion for both of these players, for the team, and just everything they've done for Boston. So it's a hard watch, but you know, I knew it was going to be a hard watch. I put it off for a little bit. I think a lot of people on Twitter also put it off for a while and just decided to watch when maybe the emotions have settled a little bit. But it was a great episode, obviously a great program. I'm also excited for it to come back, but devastating to watch and to remember what we missed out on, especially now that we're watching the Stanley Cup, and it's like, should have been us, you know, that should have been me. But yeah, so, but I was very glad that we do it. And so as much as it hurts, but it was a good program.
Yeah. I have a hard time. Cause you know, I take part in making a lot of videos like that, and I editing and, you know, doing that kind of stuff in radio. And the idea is to make people cry. Like when you're doing a you know, when you're doing a radiothon and you're putting together vignettes to get people to call in to donate money, you want them sobbing into their steering wheel. That's the goal, so that they pick up the phone and call and donate money. That's the vibe I got from that. The production value, the music right at the right time, the shots right at the right time. It's so well done. And you know, I still am not sure. I was hoping I would get more of a personal vibe as to whether I thought Bergeron was coming back next year. And, you know, Marchand, I love the guy, but he cries every time they lose. So, yeah. Like, you know, I don't get really anything from that. But, no, great production value, great resource to have as a Bruins fan. The cool thing with those is you don't even have to, like hockey. Like, you can just watch that as a reality show and get into it, you know. Also, if he comes back, I'm going to need more Connor Clifton mic'd up.
That dude
is hilarious. He's got that Quinnipiac smack talk to him, which I just love. So, but yeah, that was a lot. That was intense. It sucks that it's over, you know. We have a couple of other things going on roster wise, both on and off the ice, I suppose. Elliot Friedman, my guy, says that Bruins assistant GM and current Providence Bruin GM Evan Gold was interviewed for the vacant GM job in Pittsburgh. I quite honestly, I don't know if I would want to go work for
John Henry. Oh, John Henry, who just torpedoes every franchise that he buys.
You know, you have an aging Sidney Crosby, you know, outside of a guy like Gensel, you're not really looking at a ton of depth there, and they're picking 14th in the draft. So it's not even like you got a top five pick. So I don't know how attractive that Pittsburgh job is other than the market and the sweater. But we'll see. Mark, I don't know if you have any thoughts on what you think is next for Evan Gold or if he'll stick around.
I mean, he's a high commodity in the NHL. And there's no doubt. You know, it's the way he massages the cap on a daily basis. It's not by the year, it's by the day. And that was really on point this past season, particularly at the beginning of the year when they had to put players like Nick Foligno and some other folks on waivers just to be cap compliant and so on. But the grind of numbers was a daily thing for him. And I think that other NHL teams out there that are currently looking for a general manager, spoke very highly of him. And I believe that new president of hockey operations, Kyle Dubas of the Pittsburgh Penguins, did the interviewing. So that must have been interesting because Kyle Dubas went into Pittsburgh on day one and fired a bunch of people. And while the new Toronto Maple Leafs GM, Brad Treliving, went around meeting everybody and getting to know folks. So way to read the room there, Kyle.
Right.
But I think that losing Evan would be not catastrophic. I know there's capologists all around there that know this types of jobs and numbers and how to be compliant. But I think that Evan has done a great job here and I'd hate to lose him, but you know, if there's an opportunity for a higher role in the National Hockey League, you got to go for it. You know, I mean, you got to do what's best for you and your family. And ultimately that might be something that's a mission to him, is to be somebody of a leader of an organization and, you know, obviously report to ownership and so on. But, you know, I mean, that's just good resume stuff that he's getting interviews, because later on in a year or two, other franchises are probably going to reach out as well.
Yeah. I'm just looking at, you know, Jake Gensel's going to come up for a contract. They got Malkin for three more years. Sidney Crosby's at almost $9 million for the next couple of years. Like, it's just Letang is locked up. And I know those are their best players, but like, there's just not a lot of, it's just a lot of blech on that Penguins roster, and I would not want to be in charge of it for the next however long. How about you, Grace? You think, does anybody think that Evan Gold should be the next GM here?
Oh, really? I wasn't expecting that.
Well, I mean, Don Sweeney is well liked by ownership. I mean, I think that they really take care of their own, and the guys that really busted ass as a player, obviously Cam Neely, Don Sweeney, and so on. And, but I mean, the natural role is in progression is that's the next man up, you know, and if Don Sweeney is let go this off season or the next off season, that might pave the way for a guy like Evan Gold to come right in seamlessly, you know, knows the organization, knows the clientele that he's currently, you know, working under, and can continue to do his job effectively while still here in Boston. But like I said, these guys are high commodities around the NHL, and everybody is looking for a numbers guy and a guy that's aggressive on making certain moves, you know, to be compliant. So I could definitely see him being a top candidate if Don Sweeney is let go.
Yeah, I feel like maybe my shock and surprise at that was a little more a testament to not Evan Gold so much as it is, like, I just don't see this organization. I feel like Don, like, he's done everything. I mean, I don't ever see them letting go of Don Sweeney in the immediate or soon future. But I do think, I mean, I like Evan Gold. That's not a thing. I also would not want to go to Pittsburgh in general, but also just to be a higher up in a hockey organization. Maybe that's just because I don't like the Penguins, but I also just think that that's a, I feel like you're sitting on a time bomb, that the minute all of these guys are going to age out at the exact same time, and then you lose your whole franchise. And you're right, you're not picking young players. You're not getting anybody really significant. I mean, and don't get me wrong, I know that high numbered draft picks can turn out being great, but sometimes it takes years, sometimes it takes time. And I just don't know if that timeline is going to work out well for them. But I mean, that's the sort of thing that, you know, real big careers can be made of. If he can go and turn that around, or if anybody can go and turn that around and prove me wrong, it certainly is a testament to their skills and their ability to adapt to things. So I don't know. I'm interested to see what happens. I'd take Evan Gold over Don Sweeney. Mark, I'm just looking at you using the back scratcher.
Yeah, he loves that thing. It's disgusting. Watch that.
Hey, everyone. Give it a pound. Give it a pound.
One other quick thing on the Penguins. You know, it's not always directly indicative, but I mean, Wilkes-Barre finished last in their division in the AHL, so it's not even like they got some, you know, the cabinets full of young prospects down in the A. And I know that's not always indicative of the situation, but yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with the Penguins looking long term, like 3 or 4, 5 years down the road. I don't see a lot of stability there. The other thing to keep in mind with the GM job is what I call them, absentee owners. And the Jacobs family is not living on Causeway Street. I'm still convinced that the post game, or the postseason press conference that they had there, I felt like they were meeting Jim Montgomery for the first time, which they probably were. They might have been. I mean, say what you want about the Celtics, but the guy who came in and bitched out the team was Wick Grosbeck after one of the games. Like, that's an owner that gives a crap. The Jacobs are more interested in finding somebody that they're comfortable with and say, here, you do it. And that's why I think Sweeney and Neely, you know, they've been around and they know them, and they're like, we'll trust you. That's why they fire all their coaches, because they're like, we trust the president and the GM. It's got to be the coach's problem, so let's just fire the coach. That's why I'm worried about Montgomery, just because the absentee owners don't know him from Mark Allred. So, you know, we got to keep that in mind. It's not exactly, you know, between them and the John Henry owning the Red Sox, there's ownership issues in this town that I'm not really a big fan of. But it's definitely something to keep in mind here as we go down the pipe. Looking at some of the players on the roster. I did hear a report that the Bruins and Tyler Bertuzzi are talking. According to Jimmy Stewart at the Sports Hub, he says that Tyler Bertuzzi is looking for $7 million a year in his next contract. That wouldn't surprise me if I was Tyler Bertuzzi. I would say the same thing, right? I mean, if you're a free agent and, you know, that it's kind of slim pickings there for his position, I'd be trying to max out my value too. Grace, is $7 million too much for Tyler Bertuzzi?
I don't think it is. And I also think that that's just good. I mean, on him and his agent's part, I think that that's, you're right. It's slim pickings for his position. And also, I think a lot of teams, obviously we watched him perform so well in the playoffs, but I think there are teams that are focused on other things and not really appreciating how significant of a difference he made in our series. And I think that, like, you know that this team wants to keep you. You know that this team is fighting to keep you, and that you have a lot of power then. And he obviously is aware of the cap situation. He knows what the Bruins are working with, but he also knows his own value. So I don't think it's too much. I think that it's totally reasonable. Do I love it because I'm worried we can't make it happen? Of course. But I also think that it's just phenomenal recognition of his own talent and appreciating that, you know, you're on a team that clearly was very good with you or without you and got even better with you. But I do think he, you know, if I were him, I would want to stay. I'm biased, obviously, because I've lived in both Detroit and in the Boston area. Well, I guess I've never lived in Boston, but what?
You're all everywhere. Over the map. Yeah, you are.
Jeez. But I just think that, you know, there's no player like him that we, at least we're looking at right now. So I don't know. I'm still on the train of, I'm willing to do a lot to make it happen. I'm willing to give people up for Tyler Bertuzzi, which if you had asked me a year ago, I never would have said. I didn't like him that much when, you know, I was sitting watching him not do as well as I wanted him to on the Red Wings because I was trying to be entertained at the games. But I think he's really valuable to us. He's valuable to me. And so I don't know. There's a lot that I'm willing to do, and I don't want to get everybody angry at me on Twitter about who I'm willing to give up for Tyler Bertuzzi, but I'm certainly willing to give up a lot. So I think at $7 million, that's reasonable. I really do.
Yeah, the only thing that concerns me, and this is going to be a gripe with me for a long time, is this wonderful, stupid-ass state that we live in where you people, voted for a millionaire's tax. So now everybody, and right out of the legislature, again, I don't mean to get too nerdy with this, but a new 4%, a 4% tax on state residents with annual income over $1 million. Combined with the state's existing tax, it raises the top tax ratio to 9%. So if you make $1 million, they're taking 9% off the top. This is why you're not going to get Tyler Bertuzzi for $7 million. This is why you're not going to get Jaylen Brown for $250 million, Celtics fans, because why would they want 9% of their income taken right off the top when they can go play in Florida, Texas, Columbus, Ohio? They can go play these other places and actually get the money that they've earned. So I assume that the people who voted for this stupid-ass piece of legislature are not sports fans, or they're just clueless and don't freaking get it. So I don't mean to rant and rave about that, but what a bunch of freaking morons you are just because you're jealous of other people's millions of dollars.
It is true. That's going to be an issue going forward. I couldn't care less about the Jaylen Brown thing, but Tyler Bertuzzi, I can see that taking up issue with that. So well,
and hockey players don't make the money that the NBA players do or the NFL players do. True. So $7 million to an NBA player, it's like your seventh guy off the bench.
Yeah.
$7 million to a hockey player is a lot of money. And now you're going to take that off the top. Oh, that would piss me off. I can't even do that. I'm so dumb. I can't even do the math as to how much 9% of $7 million is. I tried to do it three times, and I don't think any of those numbers I came up with in the calculator are correct.
It's got to be somewhere in the 600,000s.
Yeah. Like, so, I mean, just taking that right off the top, which is it's bullshit. Crazy. So thank you to the people of Massachusetts. Mark, put that aside, what do you think is a fair number for Bertuzzi?
Well, I mean, if you're looking at the open market, $7 million is a very, very fair value for a player like him. I mean, I think he's 28, 29 years old. He's going for a contract that's probably going to bring him, 37, 38, 36, maybe. We'll see what happens with that. But in my opinion, I think that teams that have the cap space are going to go after Tyler Bertuzzi. And unfortunately, I think that list is going to be if he tests the free agent market, of course. But I think that list is going to primarily be lower ranked teams that have the cap space. And I'm not picking out just one team, but one team that comes to mind is Arizona. Tons of cap space, can throw tons of money at a guy like Tyler Bertuzzi. If he wants that money, then he can go for it. You know what I mean? But if he wants to be with a competitive team, he's got to come down on that price. A little bit of a team-friendly deal if he wants to be with a competitor. Unless that, it's just he's just banking for his future post-hockey, because I don't see any of the higher echelon teams offering him big money, because they're also next to the freaking, you know, ceiling of the cap. So it's going to be interesting on the path that goes, you know, with this whole scenario of trying to retain him. And also, I want to dovetail on this whole topic is there was another report from James Stewart, I believe, from 98.5, saying that the Bruins are exploring an option to shop or deal a defenseman like Hampus Lindholm to create those funds for Bertuzzi to stay. So I really don't know where we're going with that. I don't think it's a great idea to get rid of a defenseman like Lindholm. I think that you need him moving forward. He's got 7 more years on his contract. I'm not sure about the no movement, no trade details and where, you know, his list would bring him. But I think if you're going to shed money, you got to do it with players like Grizzlick, Forbert, and Riley. I mean, if you can feasibly get rid of all those players, it's $9 million right there, minus the 4.5 that you're already in the hole for. So now you're right around $5 million in cap space for with a list of freaking UFAs and RFAs to deal with.
Yeah, that's fair. I was just going to say, I think I think you're right. If you want to shed money, sure, those guys on the defensive end, but I think a lot of it's going to have to come with you have a lot of centers. You have, well, I mean, that's me wishful thinking that Krejci and Bergeron are coming back, but you have a lot of centers. You have quite a few wings. And especially with Orlov leaving, I don't know how many good defensemen you can be willing to part with. And at this point, Lindholm probably still sits at 2 or 3 in terms of our best defensemen. So I don't know. I don't know that I love that. Like I said, I'd give a lot for Bertuzzi. I don't know if that's what I would give.
Mark, I'm just curious why you're so, I don't put words in your mouth, but you're so married to a guy like Lindholm. Because, I mean, I don't know. I look at a team like Florida, and they made it to they're in the finals with Mark Stahl and Radko Gudas. And I know that, you know, Aaron Ekblad, to me, he's paid all their money. He's their best defenseman. I don't think he's a top 15 defenseman in the league. So, like, you already have McAvoy running the show. You know, you can get this far with the Connor Cliftons and Derek Forberts, and those guys aren't 7-year, you know, $6 million guys. So I don't know. I just feel like replacing defensemen like 4, 5, and 6 on your roster are easier to fill cheaply than the bottom half of your forward lines. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it's a fair point. Absolutely fair point. I know Lindholm, you know, has had good regular seasons since he's been here, and not so good playoff seasons, and that's due to injuries and so on. But I understand what you're saying, but I still think that a player like Lindholm has more to offer, and I just don't think that this is the appropriate time to think about moving him. Maybe after next year, if he has another bad playoff, if the Bruins get in, of course. Maybe that's the next offseason is a time to think about shedding further salary and possibly moving him. But I want to give the player the benefit of the doubt of getting here. I mean, we paid a pretty heavy price to get him, a first round pick. You know, I just don't want to see, you know, him moved quite yet. I think he has a little more to offer, but that remains to be seen.
Interesting. Yeah, no, it's funny. I'm looking at I'm trying not to turn this into an offseason of NHL 23 on the Xbox, but, you know, I'm just looking through the defenseman free agents, and I'm like, I'll take any of these guys, you know, and again, not to play top 4 minutes maybe necessarily, but, you know, there is a lot. I feel like there's a lot more defensive talent out there in the free agent market than there is the forward position.
What do you mean? What do you mean Lucic is a free agent? Oh,
Jesus. Here we go. We're not going down that road again. We're not talking about USDA certified beef again.
Boing.
So we'll keep our eye out on that. The Bertuzzi stuff. Oh, one other thing I wanted to throw in here real quick while we're talking about Bertuzzi. I saw a report, and I didn't put this in the agenda, and I apologize. But I saw a report that Washington is looking to move on from Anthony Mantha, and they might actually buy him out. Would you guys, either of you, do Anthony Mantha on a 1-year prove-it deal if you don't get a guy like Bertuzzi?
I actually really like Anthony Mantha.
I do too.
That's sort of a that's a niche appreciation, but I really like him. I personally would not be angry at all about that. I have consistently in the sense I've loved, like I've sort of hated but loved him. I've been like, I feel like every game I play against him, I'm like, oh god damn it, Anthony Mantha, what are you doing? And so I don't know. It's an appreciation I have for him. So I personally, I'd be totally cool with it, especially if he comes at a good price, which I think he would if we're comparing him to what Tyler Bertuzzi could come for. But yeah, I also saw that and that gave me a little tingle of excitement. I was ready to see where that could lead. I don't know.
We got more tingles going on here,
Mark. I know. Yeah. I feel like I'm sounding like Steve.
I mean, 6'4", almost 200 pounds. What do you think, Mark? Did you take a flyer on that guy?
I would, but I'm also, I really want to credit Andrew Johnson from the Short Shift podcast, a fantastic program on the Black and Gold Productions podcast network. He said that he would also take a flyer on Anthony Mantha, but on a PTO. So let's, a PTO would get him here, get him into the Warrior Ice Arena, train with the guys and so on, and possibly get some preseason games to see how he adjusts and to see if he can get back to some of that offense that kind of has slipped away over the years. And which is probably the reason why, you know, Detroit lost touch with him and traded him to Washington. And now Washington kind of basically just wants to move on from his he's not, you know, productive and so on. But if he wants to like kind of revitalize his contract, his career, I think that a PTO and show me anywhere in the NHL, it doesn't have to be the Boston, would probably benefit him if he wants to really work hard and so on. But he might even come at a lower cap hit as well. But you know, if the cap works out and Evan Gold can massage it the way that he's done in the past, I think that things could work out. And he's a big grindy forward that you know, is good along the boards. And I think that those offensive capabilities that we saw as a younger player could possibly come back on a team like Boston with their creativity and so on. But I mean, obviously it remains to be seen. We're just like, you know, throwing shit against the fan and seeing if it sticks here. But, you know, I mean, he's not a bad project to work on, but he's just going to come at a decent price.
Interesting. Well, we'll see. We got, unfortunately, a long off season to think about it. And we do have more coming up. But first, I wanted to shout out to our friends at FanDuel.com. You can make a fast break to FanDuel during the NBA playoffs, the NBA finals. Right now, new customers get a no sweat first bet up to $1,000. It's $1,000 back in bonus bet if your first bet doesn't win. I am once again taking the Heat in six because last time I came so close to it. I know Mark's got some odds. We'll do those maybe sort of after the read there, Mark. But definitely the place to go. There's no better place to bet in all the playoff action than America's number one sportsbook. You can visit FanDuel.com/Boston to get a no sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's FanDuel.com/Boston. FanDuel, the official sports betting partner of the NBA. Must be 21 plus in select states. First online real money wager only. A $10 deposit required. Refund is issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under new agreement with the Kansas Star Casino LLC. If you have a gambling problem, you can call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG. 1-800-NEXT-STEP or the next step to, or you can text next step to 53342 in the great state of Arizona. 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. 1-800-9-WITH-IT, that's WITHIT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700, or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. Gambling Helpline MA.org here in Massachusetts, or you can call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support here in the Bay State. You visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland or over in New York, 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. That's 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369 in New York, 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming, or visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. Thanks to our friends
at FanDuel. And before we get to the odds, Mark, can I do Action Electronics a little bit? Talk about our friends here at Action. For over 30 years, Action Electronics, a Walpole, Massachusetts company, has been the leading source of value-added time-saving supply chain solutions. You can visit them online at actionelectronics.com and give them a call as well. 508-668-3131. Follow the company's social media accounts. A lot going on over there. Their Facebook is Action Electronics. On Twitter, they are at AE Supply Chain. On Instagram, Action Electronics. They also have a YouTube channel as well worth checking out at Action Electronics TV. So big thank you to our friends at Action Electronics for supporting everything we do here at the B&G Network.
Absolutely. Talking about FanDuel, if anybody wants to get into next year's, the 2023-24 Stanley Cup odds, they're out right now. Even though that the 2023 Stanley Cup's going on right now, their odds for next year have been out. So they have the Colorado Avalanche as a favorite to win next year's Cup, and that's a plus 800. So decent value on that. You drop five, you can get win some decent money. Toronto Maple Leafs at plus 1,100. The Edmonton Oilers plus 1,100. The New Jersey Devils plus 1,300. Our own Boston Bruins plus 1,300. And the Carolina Hurricanes, Grace's favorite team, at a plus 1,300. So if you want to get in now, you know, you can wait a whole friggin' year. That might benefit you later on, but a small investment could turn out big.
Now, they didn't include Florida or Vegas?
Or are they further down.
They have to wait.
They're further down in the list, okay. But I just wanted to mention the top one, two, three, four.
Just weird five, that they six. Don't have either team coming back to the finals. That's in the finals this year, but strange. Sorry, Grace, what were you saying?
I was just going to say, I mean, hey, early bets sometimes almost pay off. I know, I think I've said it on the show before. After one game in the Bruins season, I was confident and felt blind faith and decided to bet them Stanley Cup at like plus 2,100 at that point, because it was when everybody was saying they might be a wild card team. So, hey, getting in early, I'm going to have to go and take a look at these odds, because it's sometimes it pays off. Like, who would have thought we would have had the season we had as the Bruins? You never know.
So as of right now, the two teams that are in this year's Stanley Cup Finals, the Vegas Golden Knights, they're at plus 13 if they win to repeat next year. And also the Florida Panthers, if they were to win this year and repeat next year, they're at plus 2,000.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Get in on that just for fun.
Yeah, I know. Right?
Interesting. Well, definitely something to look into. And again, if you go to FanDuel.com/Boston, you can take a look at all that stuff and make yourself a good chunk of change. And speaking of a good chunk of change, Commissioner Gary Bettman said the NHL salary cap is not going above $1 million in advance this summer. Not good news, obviously, for the Bruins. You know, I don't know. I watch these broadcasts and I'm like, this is what we're spending money on. I mean, ESPN does not give a shit about your sport. And then you wonder why we have no money, why we can't pay our players. So, is he just super cheap or a bad businessman? It's got to be one or the other, right, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, it's a multi-factor question there, Steve. I really don't have an answer for all of them, but I will say that the Bally Sports bankruptcy filing really put a hamper on future plans of this league and how the salary cap works. But I'm also thinking about what Ty Anderson tweeted out last night after he heard about the cap not going above $1 million. And he mentioned this: new TV deals, ads on helmets, ads on jerseys, digital ads, expansion teams among top revenue generators, debt almost fully paid off, and yet cap is rising, 1.35 league minimum players. A bit silly.
No kidding.
I have to agree with him. 98.5 Sports, Ty Anderson, fantastic writer over there.
Sure is.
One of the very few that is passionate about hockey on that station. You know, and kind of nailed it. You know, I mean, all these things are happening, but still the cap's not going up, and I don't understand why. It just doesn't make much sense at all, especially, you know, players escrow and this and that, and CBA. I know that's not coming up anytime soon, but it's going to be coming up sooner rather than later. And new TV deals need to be done appropriately. I think the Bally Sports, I don't think that was vetted properly, in my opinion. I think that was they saw a chunk of money. The NHL bit right on it, and ultimately it crashed in their face. But this is also going to open up the avenue. I know we talked about this months and months ago, Steve, before Grace joins us. But this is going to open up an avenue for another revenue-generating service where every team in the NHL, whether it be 38 by then, will have their own streaming service. No more blackouts. You can watch around the world. It doesn't matter where you are. And the team, the organization, will benefit from that. They'll derive their own sponsorships and so on. And that will increase money as well. I mean, if that happens, I'm hearing that the cap could easily jump up to close to $100 million. You know, and it just makes sense because I cannot stand seeing on Twitter that somebody in Vermont is blocked out because they're not in the market. So this would eliminate a lot of that unbelievable crap that's happening in our sport. Fans ultimately get screwed, you know, by these networks. And I think that if the team goes to an individual source of streaming, I think it's just going to be better all around. I think that revenues will go up, and also the fandom around the world will also get picked up, which it also increases more revenue as well.
Yeah. I was going to say that I don't know. I don't know that there's a better testament. When I was watching yesterday, I don't know if anybody saw within the first like few minutes, if y'all saw a part of the, I don't know, they were in like the box where they do the TNT does their like interview person talking, whatever, like a little piece of foam that's on the side of the glass fell off onto the ice and was really like kind of right in the play. The person and I that I was watching with, we both thought like it was, oh, it's just another part of one of those digital ads that got messed up, you know, but it was actually something on the ice, but we were sitting there wondering what this was, and everything we think is a part of the digital ads now. And yet it's not paying off. Like, are you telling me, or those, the ugliness of the, I don't know if y'all saw on the jerseys of the letter and the Stanley Cup patch to make room for the ad on the other side of the jerseys. You're telling me that we are still, you know, for more or less stagnant in terms of space and ability to increase cap. Obviously pissy about it as a Bruins fan, especially, but I don't know. I think it's ridiculous. I have always sort of been anti all of the digital ads and stuff. I get it. And I think it's important, but if there's no payoff for doing it and it's just there at this point to piss me off, like, get rid of it. I don't want it anymore. Yeah. Stop putting the moving ads on the boards. I don't want them.
Yeah. I think this league has already, is already, like you said, the fan is screwed. And I don't know. I mean, I look at the people that are at these Bruins games, they're not regular people because they can't afford to go to these games. And you know, when I was there announcing, the people down the Jumbotron were guys who, men, white men who just got off of their job in the Back Bay, paying them zillions of dollars. They went to the pro shop, they bought a jersey, they put it over their collared shirt, you know, with the cufflinks pulled, with the cuffs pulled up. And those are the people that can afford to go to these games. A jersey itself. Yeah. And drink, you know, pinkies out. You want a Brad Marchand jersey, it's going to cost you $250. So the fan can't go to the game. The fan can't support the game. All they can do is watch it. Like Mark said, some of them can't even do that. And when we watch it, we just get ads shoved down our throat. And now you're telling me you can't make any money. It doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, I understand the Bally's thing, which again, I always thought was a fitness gym. I didn't realize Bally's was a meal. Join Bally Total Fitness. I always thought maybe that was a 90s thing. I don't know. It was really weird. I was like, why is everyone getting like workout machines? What is this Bally's? but it is. It's frustrating. It's frustrating as a fan. It's got to be frustrating as a player. I mean, again, Matthew Tkachuk going to watch the Miami Heat play, knowing that, you know, Cody Zeller coming off the bench is making the same money as he is, playing 4 minutes a night. That's got to be so freaking annoying for these players. So, and maybe that's the reason why some of them are skipping town. For instance, transition, a guy that I really liked in Providence, Kai Vissman, defenseman, looked like a little mini Seidenberg, has decided that he's leaving. He's going back to Germany to join his team there. There has been a little bit of movement. The Bruins did sign 21-year-old Owen Peterson to a two-year contract, 6'3", 205 pounds forward. Played out in the, what was that, the OHL, the QHL, QMJHL?
The WHL.
The one I didn't mention.
The one that you did not say.
The WHL. You know, we talked last week about these are going to be the kind of players that when you don't have any draft picks, you know, and they whiffed on Manti Kivi. They didn't sign that kid. So is this going to be sort of how they're going to acquire talent over the next couple of years, Mark? And what can you tell us about Owen Peterson? I don't know much about him.
Yeah, I don't know much about him either. I mean, I watched some video and so on when the signing happened. He spent 5 years with the Winnipeg Ice in the WHL. In that time frame, he had 94 goals, 111 assists, 205 points in 237 games played. Oh. So some decent numbers. Last 2 years of the postseason hockey in the WHL, he posted 13 goals, 19 assists, 32 points in 33 playoff games. So, I mean, he can be a gamer and so on, but there's certain aspects of his game that need to be worked on and developed. And that's why he's getting an AHL only deal. This is like a show me kind of contract. It's not an NHL contract. So, you know, I know people look at the size and the weight and so on, and they say, let's get him up here as soon as possible. And there's other people out there, the asshats, that say, get the duck boats ready. You know, they don't understand. Those folks don't understand that you need in your AHL and your ECHL rosters, you need to fill them. You know, not everybody is so many people have the NHL blinders on and they don't pay attention to the minor pros, which is kind of frustrating to me. And why people just say, why bother with a kid at an AHL only contract? It's not worth it. But the Boston Bruins see something in this player. And like I said, he's a big kid and so on. This might be the type of player that replaces a current Justin Brazow on the roster. He's a big kid too, and played very well for the battalion up in the OHL in an overage year, and signed as a free agent. So I don't know if he's coming back. If he is, great. We're going to have two big forwards in this lineup for Providence next season. But it's a work in progress and so on. Much like Luke Toporowski, you know, he's still unsigned to an NHL contract. So any NHL team can come in and give him an offer and the Bruins can match. But still, you know, you got to make these additions to fill out the roster down in Providence. Speaking of Kai Vissman, a 26-year-old defenseman, big kid, 6'4", 207 pounds, posted one goal, eight assists, 9 points with Providence last season, 31 games, was injured a lot, didn't really get in the lineup. I thought that his first professional season as a Bruins prospect, he only signed a one-year entry-level contract out of the DEL in Germany. His first half of the season was basically adjusting to the North American game. The second half, I started to think he was getting it, but he wasn't completely getting it. And which ultimately started the rumors back in, I think, February that he was going to sign over in the DEL back with his Ellisburg Bears, I think. And they also got the Providence Bruins also traded for a player, a forward, a 31-year-old forward. Vincent Arsenault, he is 6'2", 220 pounds, a Quebec native who posted 7 goals, 3 assists, 10 points in 35 games last season for the the NHL Canucks minor pro affiliate, the Abbotsford Canucks. And this move for me particularly addresses the need for physicality and an intimidating factor on the ice, because in my opinion, and Steve, I think you've can agree on this, that the Providence Bruins were talented and the best team in the American Hockey League, Eastern Conference, they were also pushed around. And a lot of minor pro teams, the opposing clubs, were targeting, you know, well-talented players. More particularly, I'm just going to gravitate to the one-and-done playoff of the Providence Bruins this year against the Hartford Wolfpack. There were several players that went after, like Fabian Lysell, to get under his skin and so on. And ultimately, a high hit was given and LaSalle was out of the playoffs with a concussion. So I think this addresses a certain need for physicality and intimidation. Also, it's well known that Vincent Arsenault has played for Ryan Mougenal when Mougenal was out in the San Jose Sharks organization with the San Jose Barracuda, and even dating back to when the Worcester Sharks were in Massachusetts. So not many games between, I think it was 10 games that Mougenal had him on the bench, but still in those 10 games, you still get to see a character, how much of an impact this type of player can be. You know, if liberties are taken, this is the type of guy that can get off the bench and stir some shit up. So, look at his fight videos. He's a big man. I wrote an article about him on blackandgoldhot.com. Go check that out, because I listed a bunch of YouTube videos with his fights and some interviews and so on. You know, it's not a move that's going to, you know, call the cup success, but it's going to address a certain need that I think Ryan Mucinell, Matt Thomas, and Trent Whitfield were really looking for last season in protecting some of these younger prospects.
Yeah. And even, you know, I just think the veteran leadership too. I think you always need somebody. I was like, you got to have one guy 30 years or older to really get these kids going. And you know, Vinny Letteri is extremely talented, and I think he's a really good leader, but he's also, you know, what, like 5'7"? 5'8". I mean, he's not a big dude. So like, and he's scrappy. I mean, he'll go, but he's not this big physical presence. I remember Arsenault from when they were the Utica Comets organization. And yeah, that guy could hit. He hits loud. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
No, I think that'll be good. That'll be good to balance out what they have down there. Cause they have a lot of speed and a lot of youth. Now you got some size and some age. So, good news there. And I guess one more roster related thing is that defenseman Dmitry Orlov recently mentioned to a Russian outlet Sport Express, saying he's really looking forward to when the free agent market opens. Again, I think kind of just like Bertuzzi, it only takes one stupid team to way overpay you. It only takes one dumb GM to throw way too much money at a player. I think Orlov's going to be one of those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have a quote from that, that outlet in Russia, where Dmitry Orlov said that he's excited about the offseason. And he says, "This hasn't happened to me. I won't say that it's scary, but I really look forward to when the market opens, negotiations begin. However, nothing is happening right now. Until July 1st, I belong to Boston. So until that time, I can only sign a new contract with them. But in a month, everything will change. Of course, I would like a long contract to give stability and peace of mind, but there are many nuances. You can't take everything into account." This major credit has to go to prohockeyrumors.com for getting the information on this from this Russian outlet, and also for the credit to Sport Express, who originally wrote the article, and Jimmy Murphy of the Boston Hockey Now website, who basically got me involved in getting this topic on the agenda. So shout out to those guys.
Yeah, Grace, sounds like a guy who's gone, huh?
Yeah, I think that's the best way to put it. I am a little surprised. You know, I think right after the season ended, everybody sort of had this idea, oh, he's going back to Washington. That's where he wanted to be. That's what he wanted to do. But I don't know. I saw a few people on Twitter and Instagram, I don't remember who or even if they were reliable sources, but saying that there was some, not bad blood, but some anger, frustration, which I'm sure there would be, on Orlov's part towards the Capitals, and this idea that he, you know, he wanted to retire there, he wanted to stay there, and they sort of just, obviously, I mean, that's business, I get it. But so I don't know if that maybe has an impact on it. I thought he was going to be full in on, I want to go back to Washington. I'll do what I have to do to go back to Washington. But I think you're right. I think he's somebody that could get, I wouldn't pay him as much as I think he's going to get. But I think he knows that somebody out there is going to pay a lot for him. So I think that's where that sort of sentiment comes from. It surprised me a little bit that it wasn't, he was very overt about it. You know, I'm playing for Boston until July 1st hits, but I don't know. My heart's not broken. I'm okay with it. He did what he had to do here. I appreciated it. But I, you know, he's the third on my list in terms of the, you know, the people we got at the trade deadline, third on my list of people that I want to keep. And I also think he could end up being way more expensive than he's worth. Whereas I think that Hathaway and Bertuzzi, what we could possibly pay them, and what I think that we should pay them is pretty much exactly what they're worth. And I'm just not willing to shell that out for a guy like Orlov.
Yeah, Orlov doesn't, to me, scream like all about winning. And that doesn't mean that he took shifts off or anything like that. I just don't think that I think he would be perfectly content going to a place that will give him a 7-year deal, a place that needs to have money on the books because they're the opposite of the Bruins. They need as much salary on the books as they can. And hey, if it's sunny and beautiful all the time, that's not bad either. So, I mean, I would imagine he wants to get as far away from Boston and Washington as he can. And I see no reason why teams like Anaheim or Arizona wouldn't be throwing 7-year deals at this guy. So I think he would be perfectly content going to Anaheim, missing the playoffs every year, making his money, flying back to Modo Rocha, and just going about his business for the next 7 or so years of his life.
Yeah, I think Anaheim needs a guy like him too. So I wouldn't be surprised if that is even the team that he ends up going to. I think that they need a defenseman who's older. They've got Drysdale coming up the pipeline there, but I think needing an older, bigger, stronger defenseman they want. So I could see him doing that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we talked about last week on AFP Analytics put out on their website or the spreadsheet that he could be looking at six years extension worth above $6 million. I honestly think that with the cap crunch right now, and we're trying to, you know, try to keep players like Todd Bertuzzi, like Grace said.
Did you just say Todd Bertuzzi?
I did. I keep doing that.
Unbelievable. I'm not making that mistake. I think it's because I didn't really watch Todd Bertuzzi.
No, the Todd Tyler.
No, because you lived in Detroit.
Yeah, the Todd Tyler thing is a communicable disease, and I think I just
passed it on
to you is what happened.
But anyway, so while we're trying to keep him, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, you know, I just don't see that happening, to be honest with you. As much as I really want it to happen, the cap space just, to me, doesn't say it's going to happen. And it, like, you know, if he can't find a home that wants to pay him that money and particularly the last contract of his NHL career, like Steve said, there's always tax-free money over in Russia. Get it in a bag at a restaurant, slid under the table, and, you know, you go about your business from home. But still, it's like I said, if we had the room, I wouldn't mind retaining the player, but we're cap strapped. It's going to be very hard to retain a lot of the guys that we had last year that got us to the first round and an exit.
In Russia, you don't make money. Money makes you. Take the gun and leave the cannoli is what's going to happen with that guy. So there you go. Lastly on the agenda today, our listener, Darren Gill from the UK. All right. Sent an email question about how the Bruins, well, I guess we can get to it. Do you have the email pulled up there, Mark?
I do not. I just thought that we would just talk about it. I didn't take a screenshot of that, okay. But Darren Gill, a longtime friend of mine and longtime BNG supporter from over where the original birthplace of the Stanley Cup was, sent in an email and talking about the massive failure in the first round and so on. And how that the Boston Bruins should hire a sports psychologist. Now, I looked into this this morning as I was getting the agenda ready and looked at the club directory, and I didn't see any sports psychologists on there. But what I want to like add to Darren's question is I think that stuff like that is relied on the personal player himself getting. If he wants to talk to somebody, you know, I think that's on them. You know how Jeremy Swayman's got a whole team of you know, professional people that, you know, travel with him all the time. I'm not saying they travel with him, but they're always nearby to talk and so on. I don't know about an internal sports psychologist. I mean, would it be beneficial? It might and so on. But I don't know. It's an interesting question. But he also brings up, because he's a big cyclist guy, that a certain psychologist over in Europe was working with several guys that ride the bike on like Tour de France and so on. And like this one person really turned around their careers and their workouts and, you know, how they go about a race and in everyday life and was constantly with them. So, I mean, it's not a bad question. It's not a bad idea, but I just don't know how useful that would be especially on a salary that's paid by the Jacobs. I don't think that that's something that's probably going to be, it's not, you know, it doesn't go against the cap or anything like that, but you know how cheap Jeremy Jacobs is. So
I sure do firsthand. What about you, Grace?
Yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of teams nowadays, the reason why it might not show up on any website, I think a lot of teams nowadays contract out, or you're right, they leave it to the personal player. But, you know, I think if it's something that, like, we can, if it's something that players want, I'm sort of all for the, you know, is this something that players, is going to make players feel more supported or feel like they're getting whatever they need? Like, if players are for it, I'm like, I think that it's worth it. I think anything the players are, you know, that will help the players feel more secure, supported, confident, whatever, I'm all for. I think every little bit helps. But I also recognize, I think you're right. I think a lot of players, it's a, you know, a personal thing. If they want to go, it's not like they're not available to them. It's not like the options aren't out there. But, you know, being able to have it, you know, on hand, maybe it would just help enough. Like I said, like a lot of teams contract out. So being able to say, like, we have this available resource, use it if you want. But I don't think it is a bad idea. I think it's, I don't know a ton about sports psychology. It's not really my forte, but I mean, you know, all sorts of psychology helps all sorts of people. So I think that, who knows, it could be the missing piece that somebody needs. But there's certainly a market for it. And so I don't know, but I hadn't even considered it until when I saw it on the agenda and we were talking about it. So I think that's something really interesting. So,
yeah, I think the players that want to talk, would like to talk about it, probably already have a psychologist or a therapist, and the ones who don't, you know what I mean? I think they kind of let, like you guys say, it said, let them do their own thing. And it's amazing how many times you hear, like, especially in baseball, like, oh, they think it's going to be a lower fracture of the ankle, but they're getting a second opinion, right? And they always get a second opinion from another doctor, and it's because they have their own means of doing different things. So I think the people that want to talk about it have their own guru, and those who don't, you know, they talk to their, you know, Jake DeBrusk got a dad who played in the league. I'm sure he's got a lot of value there, and, you know, the support staff, family, friends, wives, girlfriends, you know, that probably goes a long way too. Sometimes it's just, you know, a week out in Bali that gets your mind right. You know, sometimes that's all it takes. So, but it's a good question, Darren. We appreciate you writing in. And again, if anybody has any questions, thoughts, concerns, you can always hit us up on our listener hotline, 978-504-2727. You can always catch Grace, Mark, or I on Twitter and social media, hashtag AskBNG. Our handles are right there on the screen, so you can hit us up that way. And since it is the first episode of a new month, Mark, I believe we have a different jersey to give away by the end of this month. Not today, but at the end of the month. Is that correct?
Yeah, we do. But I just want to, I know I didn't put this in the agenda, and I apologize, but we do have a question from our Facebook group, Black and Gold Hockey Podcast on Facebook. And I love this name, Jeff Mo Chillin. Yeah. He says, if Bergeron comes back, that means the mindset is winning a cup again. Correct? Question mark. If so, does that make sense to use the youth that we have, could make the jump, Lauko, Beecher, Steen, McLaughlin, etc.? Or do they shore up the bottom six with some budget league minimum to 2 million experienced veteran type guys for a hopeful deep run? If Bergeron retires, do they start the rebuild, retool, depending on their standing placement come trade deadline? Thanks for all the work you do. Go Bees.
Jeff Mo Chillin. Real quick, I think the hardest part's the money. Like, it's not like if Bergeron stays, you can go out and be like, okay, cool, let's go get, you know, let's go get some high touted, you know, expensive guy. You can't really do that. The good thing about the forward group in particular is that even if, whether Bergeron stays or goes, you still have Marchand, Pasternak, Zacha. You got Taylor Hall if you need him. You got Charlie Coyle. You know, so just right there is already a core of guys that can, I mean, those are playoff caliber guys. Like, you could put me out there on a wing and we'd still probably be an eight seed. So I think you're going to see, regardless, you're going to see more Oscar Steen, more Lauko, more McLaughlin, more Beecher. You're going to see more of those guys that don't cost as much money. Whether or not they're ready, I'm not sure, but I think a lot of that's just going to come down to the finances.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it doesn't matter to me if Bergeron, I'm actually thinking highly that Bergeron and Krejci don't come back. But if they do, I honestly think that youth is still going to be implemented. You know, because you still have to work, you got salary cap constraints coming up. It's not going to be an easy time for Evan Gold and Don Sweeney. So I think a lot of the youth at cap friendly numbers is going to be, instilled in the roster next season to be compliant. So, great question. Jeff Mo Chillin.
Love that. I love it. What do you think, Grace? So sort of the same thing.
Yeah, I would say so. I think to answer the second part of that question, I don't think that, without Bergeron and Krejci, which you're right, every day I get a little more worried that it won't happen. But I don't think it has to be a retool rebuild yet. I think we've put ourselves in a pretty good position, despite the salary cap constraints, a pretty good position to not have to do this entire, you know, knock on wood, this entire rehaul, at least in the near future, which is good considering how few draft picks we have. But so I don't think it will have to be an entire rebuild. I think that we have really good players coming up from the AHL who haven't had the chance in many cases to prove their abilities at the NHL level. So I think that, you know, I still have a lot of hope and faith in the team. I think Steve's right. You know, I think the three of us could be their fourth line, and you have those guys up in the top half. And I don't know. Yeah. I honestly, hey, maybe we third line, who knows? But I think that, there's a lot of talent there. So I'm not terribly worried if they don't come back, just in terms of we're not going to have to do what I think the Penguins are going to have to do in a couple of years, which right. is just, you know, you're flipping everything over. So,
let's remember, you made a great point that you don't have any draft picks. So sucking gets you nothing. Like, you don't benefit right. at all from tanking. Yeah,
exactly.
You're not getting next year's Connor Bedard. It's not going to happen.
Right.
I want to mention, if we were the fourth line, I want to be the right wing because I want to come with the back scratching slap shots. Come on. Was that a funny fail?
That was pretty good.
Oh, see?
I liked it.
Right. Success.
I would get 125 penalty minutes and they would all be lazy.
Hooking,
no back checking, nothing.
No, yeah. Yeah.
All right. To wrap this up, we do have a Patreon account that we're doing, and this month is the Adam McQuaid jersey. It's hand signed, fully authenticated, right here, and it says right there 2011 Stanley Cup champs. So, if you want to be eligible for this jersey, please donate $1 per episode, and I'll tell you a little bit about how this Patreon thing works. Is that $1 is donated to us to help pay the bills here at the Black and Gold Sports Media Company. And half of that dollar goes into buying new jerseys every month for listeners and Patreon members to win. So please go to patreon.com/blackandgoldhockeypodcast and help us out. We'd certainly appreciate it. There's nothing more than I like doing is delivering. I ship a hand-signed jersey. I want to go to freaking California to hang out with Casey. I think Casey would love me to go up there and give her Matt Grizzly jersey that she won last year.
Oh, maybe someday.
Have fun.
Here's your someday. Jersey. By the way, can I use the bathroom?
Yeah.
While I'm here, do you have any beverages?
Any seltzies? Any seltzies?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm down on the seltzies, my friend. It's a great little program to, spice up the fan cave and so on, because, I know you need it. So we certainly, would appreciate any more donations. We always do that, but I always like, working with Bruce Sullivan from Boston Sports and Music Memorabilia, getting these jerseys and so on. They're authentic, and he takes a video and pictures of every time he gets somebody signed. So I think he had, I think he had Ed Johnston and Jerry Cheevers, who were the starting goaltender and the backup for both Stanley Cups in 70 and 72 recently. So I'm going to probably buy some of those jerseys and maybe even not raffle them, but give them away as a set. You know, nice. Two jerseys for one would be nice. A great thing for for our listeners and supporters. So we appreciate it. Everybody that does that.
Love it. I appreciate it. We appreciate everybody who tunes in every week. It's a blast for us to get up here and do this. And again, this episode, as always, brought to you by FanDuel.com, the official, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network. Sign up now at FanDuel.com/Boston and claim your no-sweat first bet for $1,000. This is a lot of fun considering that the season's over and everybody's depressed. I still think we're having fun with it. But thanks, everybody, for joining us. It's been great.
Thanks again for tuning in and supporting this week's episode of the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast. Please give the show a 5-star rating and write a review on listening platforms such as Apple Podcasts and Spotify Podcasts. If you'd like to contact the show for advertising opportunities or to send us a question or topic idea we should be discussing, please send us an email to blackandgoldproductionsllc@gmail.com. Don't forget to share our program on your social media platforms with other hockey fans and follow our Twitter accounts at blackandgoldpod, at bngproductions, at blackandgold277, and at kevin_o'keefe89. Also, please don't forget to check out our official blackandgoldhockey.com website where we cover the Bruins organization from the NHL level down to the prospects worldwide. Peace out.